Hello, everyone. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode 599, the last episode before the big 600 shows up. I'm going to have... Guys, should I try to find something special to do on for number 600? I don't know. We'll have to find out. The last podcast, I went... I think I went a little overboard. You think? Just a little? My tendency, you know, when you're going after it, when you're attacking institutional thinking. Now, I've been doing this for a long time under many different auspices and not knowing that I was really attacking institutions, but I would single out an institution here, an institution here, you know, school or government or you know, whoever. And the thing you have to really try to get away from is institutionalism. Now, it's very difficult in modern society to do this. And so I might talk a little bit about what I've tried to do. Not that I say that you should do any of this yourself. Honestly. You know, I don't know what the right answer is. If somebody has the right answer, send it to me. autism@quix.us. As usual, you can always do feedback to that. Just to let me know what you think, how you're reacting, what you want to do. It's available. You can have it. I was reading this story. It's probably about 12 or 13 years old now. And I wish I had the fellow's name, or at least where the website is where you can get it so that you could see it, but I don't have it with me, and I don't think it's on my... I don't think it's on the laptop right at the moment, but I'm sitting in a car trying to get somewhere. This guy decided, he felt kind of a yearning for this, and I can certainly relate to having a yearning for a little bit of freedom, for a little bit of, you know, more than what I have now. You know, people can always say, oh, but you live on the freest country on earth. You shouldn't be complaining. And you go, why? Why not? Why not complain about it? If you want more freedom than you have, why not complain about it? Just because, relatively speaking, you've got it better than some people. Why not get more for yourself? Especially in a case where it can certainly inspire others to go for more freedom, too. I was reading this, that this guy had kind of a hankering for just getting away from things, society. I don't know if he's a freedom walk particularly, but he was always intrigued by Indians, by primitive living. And there is a certain real small subculture that's a big deal, you know. You want to be... You know, you feel like you're closer to the earth. You feel like you're more natural. Deep ecologists can get into this. Some deep environmentalists can get there. I've always looked somewhat askance at, you know, the compact fluorescent light bulb environmentalists. Because, you know, I don't know. I just do. I don't know if it's just they're being disingenuous. I guess when I have been accused of being an environmentalist or stuff like that, and I don't often get accused of it, I only do it for one reason, because it's cheap. If it isn't cheap, I won't do it. I didn't get compact I didn't get home, guys. Compact fluorescent lights until Walmart sold them for practically nothing. Until Walmart got them. They don't sell them for practically nothing. Because I'm sorry, you know, electricity costs a lot of money. Any way I could get to save money on electricity, I think I will. So, we have some compact fluorescents in our house. More so now, because I tend to prefer the fluorescents to other things, just from an energy-saving standpoint. I want to save money on my bill. I don't know if it ultimately... makes the big difference, you know. You always have to take a look at how much more they cost you at the store and then how much it reduces your electric bill, and then see how long it takes, you know, over lifespan. And then you can get kind of a sense of whether you're actually saving money using it or not. I'm one of those kind of environmentalists. I am not a save the earth, kiss the whale sort of guy. I'm just not that sort, you know. I think the whales will be much happier if I leave them alone. I'm not going to get into that. Okay, so this guy is more of the tree hugger type, honestly. Now, he tried to be a vegetarian. Of course, that didn't work at all. Vegetarianism is only something you can really pull off if you're really in a very exotic culture. Now, America is exotic enough to do the job. Barely. You have to be in a really exotic culture. I think back to the farm in, Summertown, Tennessee? The old farm, not the current farm. Current farm's but a mere shadow of what the original one was. Who was the guy? Stephen Gaskin? Something close to that. That could be his name. It could be close to that. He's run for president a few times lately. I think Stephen still actually lives there. He was, for lack of a better word, their spiritual leader. And they were heavy. They were heavy into this stuff. I mean, there's people that talk, oh, I'm an environmentalist, I put compact fluorescent bulbs in my house, and I turned down my thermostat, you know, which is fine. I'm not gonna smack all over them, except what they do is barely anything worthwhile. It's kind of like the carbon footprint people. Everybody talks about the carbon footprint these days, and the really radical ones will say, I'm not flying on an airplane because I don't think I can make up for the carbon footprint I'm leaving behind. Which I think is so funny because, you know, they get into their SUVs and they go zipping around, or they might go out and buy an expensive, absolutely expensive, electric hybrid car and run all around the universe with that, polluting the environment. I have a little more respect for those deep ecologists, those deep environmentalists who say, you know, I'm really going to do something. I respect those people more than your garden variety, navel-staring, blaming everything on everybody else sort of thing. These are the guys that say, I'm not going to yell and scream at everybody else. I'm going to do something myself. So the farm was full of these people that really wanted a whole different kind of lifestyle. And so they went out there. They had a huge tofu factory, started their own school, lived out of the buses that basically had gotten them there in the first place. I think they had done a march on Washington to try to bring... try to highlight, I don't remember what it was. It may have been the Vietnam War. It may have been any number of things. I really forget, and I'm not going to try to tell you what it is because I don't know. But they decided they liked being around each other so much, and they And they enjoyed each other's company so much that they decided they would pool their money and buy a farm and live on it. In a communal way, a commune. There are a few communes in the United States, not a ton of them. And, oh, great. I've got silly truck drivers trying to kill me. Anyway, so we got onto this farm, everything was great. They were authentic, and they really tried, and they did some wonderful things. They used to go out, they would have these old beater cars, horribly beater cars, and to go out and to support their mission, what they were trying to do, they were trying to change the world. And they were going to start here and then see where it went. They would take these beater cars and they'd go out and they would do volunteer work. They would, they would do some things for money because you have to have money. You know, they sold tofu products for a while. They did a whole lot of stuff. They did fundraisers. They had a rock band. I think it's called the Farm Band. And they would go out and they would do concerts and raise money just to support, I think the outfit was called Plenty. Maybe. Don't quote me on this. I'm trying to do this all from memory. It's been a long time since I ever looked at the farm. Because it's gone now, by and large. The actual place is still there. Some of the same people are still there. Like Stephen is still there. Their spiritual leader, their prophet, their guru. I think they called him their teacher. Because he was their college professor wherever they were. I even forget which college they were. I don't know if it was even Berkeley. Doesn't matter. But, you know, it's gone. It's somewhat lost. Those kind of people, and I had real respect for those kind of people. I felt a bit of a kinship with them. I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to, you know, kind of be a Buddhist about it and not want to hurt any living thing particularly and make my life miserable trying to make some bug's life happy. Because I don't know if a bug's happy or not. I don't go that far. And there were some people on the farm that did and some that didn't, you know. What was good about them was that they were reasonably open-minded. And they let things happen. Now, to try to create something like the farm would be illegal. There are now laws making sure that you really can't do that very easily. You know, renter's laws, squatter's laws. You know, you can't convert a vehicle into a home. They'll tax you to death for trying. And, you know, it's just like that. And it wasn't like, oh, we're going to do the anti-farm bill. And they did that. They just wanted to make sure they, you know, who was talking about Jimmy Doan? And I'm not saying that I've just become a Jimmy Doan disciple lately. He's funny, and he does say some good things. He talked about incrementalism, which is a big, you know, that is the predominant way that you move from freedom to total totalitarianism, or to fascism, or to absolute socialism, is you take it a little bit at a time. You know, you start doing something, people laugh and say you're crazy and it doesn't work, but give it 10 years. They keep throwing it out there, and all of a sudden it gets passed. You know, you pass little bits of it until you basically got it, and then you go ahead and say, well, we've already done this, 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 and this, let's just do this now. It's like, oh, okay. It's really funny. Anyway, all right, how to get away from institutions. You could do something like the farm. You could do something like this fellow I was talking about did, kind of going back to nature. And he was really authentic about it. He got down to eating animals. Because that's what hunter-gatherer type things did. You would get some, you know, if you were agricultural at all, you know, you would raise beans or you would raise whatever else you can raise. It's kind of funny because, you know, native peoples didn't really raise what we would consider a truck farm. They didn't have, you know, a row of lettuce, a row of carrots, a row of corn, a row of this, a row of that, and had this whole variety going on all the time. They only seemed to have done 2, 3, maybe 4 things that were really well suited to their environment, and that and the animals they could catch and eat were basically what they ate, you know. And people go, oh, it's not healthy. Oh, it doesn't follow the government guidelines at all for the food pyramid and stuff like that. And honestly, who cares? It worked. They were happy people. You know, they said, well, they didn't live very long. You go, well, there was a lot of factors why they didn't live very long. This guy who wrote this little article brings up the fact that since they were probably happier in their 40 years than the twisted up, you know, stressed out people are for 80, like we are. You know, some people died at 40. The average was 40. But then you had to factor in that there was a lot of, you know, since we didn't have a very medical outlook on childbirth, a whole ton of children died. You know, death of infants was just a fact of life. So, yeah, when they say the lifespan was only 40, that didn't mean that everybody was destined to die at 40, just like not everybody now is destined to die at 80. We have a lot of people that are over 80. The biggest difference was, it was an infant mortality. So, yeah, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, institutional thinking, you know, everybody's supposed to think that what they have now is so much vastly better than what was had before, that you would never want to do that. So they skew things, they highlight certain aspects of our lives and say that getting rid of all that communal life was worth it, if only for this. If only for the fact that we have tomatoes now. I love tomato. But, you know, would I give up tomatoes? Would I give up computers, for instance, for the chance to have a little bit more freedom? Yeah. And, but who says you have to give that stuff up? Well, those are the products of a society. It's so fun. I can use the products of this society to do something else. I don't have to worship the silicon god. In fact, most of the computers I have are what other people throw away. So in fact, all of them are. I have equipment that's been thrown away by other people, or sold as scrap. All of it. I don't think I've bought anything new. If I bought anything, I bought one computer new. My first workhorse computer, it didn't die. I just took it apart because, you know, I had other computers in it. There really wasn't any use to holding on to the thing. My CPM computer, my Ampro Little Board Z80, fantastic computer. Used it for about 10 years. From about 1988 until about 1998, I got when my mom finally tossed her old computer at me. She was getting a new computer, one that ran Windows 98. She gave me the computer that ran Windows 3.1. I still have it. I still have that computer. I remember looking at I remember looking in my son's closet, and there it was. I thought I had thrown the silly thing away. I've certainly used pieces off of it for 100 different things. So I think I can rebuild it in a second. And it was a good little computer. I could probably soup the thing up, you know, maxed out its RAM, which wasn't going to be hard. It was a, I think it was a 480, no, it was a 386. Because either a 386 or a 486SX. It didn't have a floating point processor. It had maybe 8 megs of RAM on it total. I mean, that was the maximum it seemed to be able to take. It had 4 built into it. I should turn it into a Linux box just for fun. Just to say I can. I think it'd be a kick in the butt. Anyway, so it doesn't matter. How'd I get here? Oh, yeah. People saying, oh, well, you're trying to get away from society, but you use all the trappings and the tools of it. And I say, why the heck not? They're here. They're thrown away. My whole thing is, how can I maximize the amount of money I have? You know? I've tried in the past to talk my wife into it. She likes the house she's in. She likes the lifestyle she has. It costs the amount of money that it costs. And I, you know, I have to respect that to a degree. You know, I have to let her do that. Whether I want to or not. You know, I try to talk her into something different. You know, let's try something else. Let's try something that's a little cheaper. But then again, I don't have the money for it. And that's what it comes down to. Because the way things have to be done, you have to spend a whole ton of money on things. I need to get back to the yurt idea. Because Lisa was actually saying, I could do a yurt, Jay. I think I could live with a yurt, although there's some things about a yurt I don't like. But that's for other people to decide whether they care about that or not. Anyway, so. When I want to get away from institutions, that's how I do it. I try to reduce their impact on me. You know, if you're not living in the traditional way, there's a lot of ways you can just walk away. And all of a sudden, it's just like, well, it doesn't touch you. Like, when I ride a bike instead of a car to work, and I do that quite a bit, any chance I get during good, decent weather, I skirt so many things, so many possibilities. Number one, I have to pay for gas. Number two, I don't have to pay for insurance. I don't have to, I don't even really have to have a driver's license. I mean, I do, but I wouldn't have to if I stay on the bike. Now, there's certain other things I can't do on a bike, which is I can't go long distances particularly. The bike works well for in-town type stuff. I have a bike for going from home to work. It's 5 miles away. So when I go there and back, it's 10 miles a day. And that's a pretty good workout. I find my legs are trying to get back into the swing of it. I've done better in the past. Last year, I could pick it back up. It only took maybe about a week for me to get back up to decent speed. This time, it's taken me longer. I'm dying. Anyway. Not a horribly big deal. It's little things like that. You know, if you do solar or if you do wind energy and you do it, you always have to do it quietly, if you can, or try to just kind of make it so your neighbors don't get angry. If you can't make it loud or else they'll start complaining to somebody that you need to take that car garbage out and they'll send the government after you. If you're quiet about it, you can get lots of freedom. All of a sudden, you don't have to pay for a bill. I always thought the most important thing when it came to to really trying to reduce your spending, really trying to do things, is actually to physically eliminate one bill. Now, I was trying, you know, I'm sitting here going, the easiest one to get rid of is gas, to go all electric, but by and large, that's a bad idea. There's a lot of things that that gas does a lot better and more efficiently than electricity does. Electricity is lousy for heating, because it takes a ton of it, and it costs a ton, and things like that. So, you know, I was trying to get rid of a bill, and I didn't get around to it. I was trying to convert us over to kerosene, which is something where at least you can store it, and you can try and be really, really, it's really a visceral thing. You can be really efficient with it. I'll have to come back to this. Let me come back to this and try to remember some of the things I've tried to get shy of industrial society. This is Jay Nemro. Where's my pointer? There it is. I'll be right back. Hi, this is Jay. I'm back. Back in the... wherever I am. I'm back. And got some good documentation pulled together at the DeBock office, and I'm just going to go home now. I'm not going to try to hit Clovis because, you know, things suck. Anyway, I'll call Lisa here in a little bit to let her know. Anyway, okay, so what was I talking about? We were talking about ways to avoid the institution. Now, I don't remember what I was saying before. I know I went blah, 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 because that's what I do. But, gee whiz. I don't want to repeat things I already said. Getting off of some lists, I think, you know. Well, no, we were talking about utilities and things like that and how to avoid utilities. But that has more to do with cheap than getting out of institutional things. But honestly, those things that are really quite institutional. I am, what am I? I'm struggling. Well, no, I'm not. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's a bad time. Maybe it's a bad time to be making a recording on this particular subject, because it's just, it seems to not be connecting in my head particularly. And so, what I've said so far will have to suffice. And, I'm just going to have to come up with a wonderful episode 600. And, once we get there, that's what'll happen. I think we'll do 600 and then we'll launch. I think we'll probably close out this group of podcasts and start a new one. Do another set. And we'll just see how that goes. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode 599. And I forget what we were talking about exactly. You know, we're probably talking about how to avoid, I don't know if it's really institutions, but how to avoid how to be cheaper, I guess. A little bit. Maybe not. I don't know. You guys figure it out later. This is Jay Nemro. Have a great day.